Hey there, welcome to Escaping Moral Adventure. In today's episode, we will go through some specific examples of more moral adventure with you. But before we do that, we do have a few housekeeping items to cover with you.
Yeah, in our first example, I was talking about interacting with people, and I said that my interactions are transactional transactions, I think. So I think that's like meta transactional. I don't know what it means. But what I was trying to say is my interactions with people are very transactional instead of deep. So that was item one. And item two, Fallon threw me off by talking about me being too old for using Facebook in college. And so I ended up coming up with a MySpace reference, and I said Dave was definitely my friend. So the only thing I'm going to say about that is I meant to say Tom was definitely my friend, and I won't say more about it. I'll leave it as an inside joke for anybody that knows MySpace.
Sounds good. And then I just wanted to clarify, I was talking about the book called The Common Rule, and I could not remember the number of habits, and it is actually 8 habits. So 4 weekly habits and 4 daily habits.
I will say, I said it was between 7 and 14, so I think
I guess you were correct.
Okay, great. So with that, on to the episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today, we thought it would be helpful to dive a bit deeper into the concept of moral adventure. Mark and I were just kind of talking about this the last few days, and I was asking questions about it, and I was just saying, I need some examples. Like, give me some examples of what moral adventure might look like. And so we were talking through some of those, and he was coming up with some examples, and I was as well. And so anyway, as we were doing that, we kind of thought, hey, this might be helpful to chat about and share with everyone else, just to kind of give you some more concrete examples of what it may look like if you are stuck in moral adventure. And so just as a refresher, I'm going to define what moral adventure is, and then we'll kind of get to the rest of the content. So it is the posing of questions, criticisms, difficulties, or rationalizations resulting in the avoidance of taking right action.
So yeah, that's the definition of moral adventure. We thought we would give some very concrete examples of what it might look like to be stuck. So we'll do 2 examples. We're going to give the example. We're going to talk about why it's an example of moral adventure. And then we'll also try to give some ideas for how to get out of it. So, 2 examples. The first one is related to helping other people. And the example we actually wrote down was that you don't even know someone that needs help. We were very specific about saying that this was the example because it's beyond just saying you don't help other people or won't help other people. So I think a lot of people would say, well, I would help other people, or sure, if I knew people needed help, then I would help them. But what we wanted to say is you don't even know people that need help. And the reason why this could be an example is it could mean that you're not engaging with people on a deep level. It could mean that your interactions with people are very shallow or shallow to some degree, at least. And this really hits home for me. I mean, this is one that I would say I struggle with and still do, or have struggled with and still do. And that's because I treat interactions a lot of times as a transactional transaction. I'm interacting with somebody because I'm buying something, or I'm, you know, just seeing someone in my normal day-to-day or at work or at church or whatever. And so I tend to stay sort of at the surface level with people. And so I don't get to know them. I don't get to know about what's going on in their life and what's going on, you know, that might be a struggle for them or that they might need help with. So yeah, that's an example, or could be an example, of being stuck in moral adventure. And the reason why that's moral adventure is because there are some rationalizations for why you might do this. Well, you might be busy. You don't want to take time out of your schedule. You're doing something else. Or you don't want to bother someone. Maybe they don't want to reveal to you what's going on in their life. Maybe you might see it as you bothering them. So there's real rationalizations you could actually say that are causing this. But that's an example of really being stuck. So how do we get out of this?
Right. Well, the word that comes to mind as I'm just kind of listening to you, Mark, talk about this is selfishness. And I feel like in this example, we just have to stop being selfish. And I'm putting myself in this as well, right? Like Mark mentioned earlier, these examples hit close to home for us. So, you know, there's plenty of times that I've chosen not to engage with people because I needed to get on to the next thing, right? Whatever that was, or maybe the kids were throwing a fit and I needed to get going, or whatever the case may be, right? But when I really stop and think about it, it's selfishness. You know, there may be some rationalizations or something that may not fit under selfishness, but we'll just go with that for now as the umbrella. And so yeah, to get out of this, to get unstuck, if you will, one way would be stop being selfish and focus on others instead. And just really engage with others. I mean, pick up on cues, ask questions, ask maybe kind of probing questions even, or ones that might be a little out of the norm, right? That might dig a little bit deeper than if you're just passing someone on the street and saying, hey, how was your day? You know, if they pause kind of and say, oh, it was okay. I mean, then if your radar goes up like, oh, I don't think it really was okay, I think there might be something more to that, then ask a follow-up question, you know, instead of going on your way. And go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I was going to just make a little bit of a shout out here because we have a whole sort of content related to loving your neighbor. I think it's a really good place to go reference for this exact one because it talks a lot about these things, being interruptible and some other principles as well. So shout out to check that out as well as a good way to get out of this one because it really relates really well, I would say.
Yes, I agree.
Now there's just before we move on to the next one, one of the things I wanted to say, again, back to the cutting close here, that it can make you come across, if you get stuck in this one, it can make you come across as distant or guarded or not approachable to other people, which again is sort of a almost a self-fulfilling prophecy because you stay shallow. So people expect you to be to stay shallow in their relationships with you and therefore are less prone to open up with you. So it sort of is it's going the wrong way, let's say. It's heading the wrong direction. So
yes.
Yeah, definitely a good one to get out of.
Yes, I agree. Some of those words have been used to describe me before, so.
I can relate for sure. And by the way, studies have shown that helping other people, by the way, actually adds meaning in people's lives. So it's not just that, you know, it's sort of a general good thing. It also is helpful for you as an individual as well. So yeah, the first one is you don't know anybody that needs help. So that's the first potential example of being stuck. Should we move on?
Yep. Number two.
All right. Number two. Do you want to introduce this one?
Sure. So another sign that you may be stuck in moral adventure would be that you say you're too busy to exercise, eat healthy, spend more quality time with those you love, too busy to read, to volunteer, right? Just insert positive change you want to make here. Your excuse is, or you're saying that you're too busy to do that positive change. And yeah.
Yeah, this is a really easy one to get into, I think. And it's particularly a problem because, well, let me just introduce another piece. I always like to introduce some studies here.
Yes.
There's another study that was done out of the University of London, and researchers actually found that we're hardwired to choose the easy path. And why do I bring this up with being busy? They actually found that you'll sort of trick yourself into thinking that what you're doing is the right thing just to avoid doing the hard thing. And so, for example, you can trick yourself into thinking you're busy or too busy to do something so that you won't do the hard thing. Now, the reason I say the hard thing is oftentimes these meaningful changes, if you want to get healthy or, like you said, read more or quality time, those are what I would call, you know, not my concept, but what I would call a important but not urgent thing. So it's an important thing to do, but it's not urgent. And we typically fall into certainly things that are important and urgent. Those are, you know, your kids are fighting and you got to go break up a fight, or, you know, there's an emergency at work. Those are important and urgent. But there's also lots of things we fall into that are not important and also not urgent. So this is getting on your phone, checking Facebook, checking Twitter, checking whatever social media network here, sort of every moment that you have free, getting on your phone to play a game or, you know, whatever. Sometimes it can even be things like feeling like you, and this is a tricky one, but feeling like you can't detach from like whatever your kids are doing right then. Like not being able to carve out space outside of just, you know, busy time with your kids sort of all day, every day. Because, you know, your kids are home all day, every day. So why wouldn't you be doing things with them? And so I think that's maybe another example of how you could think you're too busy to actually make these meaningful changes.
Yeah.
So how do we get out of this one?
Well, that's a good question. I have some ideas. So one thing I think that would be helpful is to just take a day or two and log how you spend your time those days. And actually, I mean, be honest with yourself. If you spend 4 hours of your time binge watching a show on Netflix or scrolling through social media, write that down. You know, it's going to be kind of hard, I think. If you do that for a couple of days, it will be difficult to go back and look at that because it will be convicting. I know when I've done that before with my time or with like if I've kept a food log or something and I go back over the next couple of days and look at it, it's just like, oh, I see something. I just have to hide my eyes. You know, like really, you ate that much junk or you spent that much time, you know, doing whatever it may be on your phone or something like that. So do a time log and for a couple days, honestly, do a time log and then go back and evaluate that. How much time are you spending just aimlessly, or how much time are you, I don't know if I want to say wasting, but where are the areas that you're spending time on things you don't really want to prioritize, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know where it's from, but there's a quote that I always liked, sort of like this, which was, it's called "Hustle While You Wait." And it means like there's all these little gaps in time throughout your day, and we can fill them with like just sort of meaningless things, but you could also fill it with something meaningful. So if you had a little gap, maybe that's a great time for prayer or reading, even if it's small amounts, or it's a very specific time where you'll say, you know what, I'm going to go spend some quality time with my wife or my husband or my kids. Like take those gaps, and instead of filling those gaps with sort of, again, back to the unimportant and not urgent things, fill them with some important and not urgent things. And I think that's a really good way to do it too.
Yeah, that actually reminds me, when I was in college, I would fill little gaps with studying. If I got to a class early, I would study material or go through flashcards or something like that.
I think it's hard because for me personally, especially, you bring up the school thing, so I'll just make an aside here. You'd go from class to class. I wanted a break. I wanted like a mind break, like get out of that class. I got 10 minutes. I just want to get on Facebook or something and decompress.
Facebook was not around when you were in college.
Okay, whatever. MySpace. How about that?
I think it was around a little bit. I don't know.
It was coming.
I think you were graduating.
There was definitely MySpace. Dave was definitely my friend back then.
Who's Dave?
Okay, see, you don't know MySpace.
I had it. Okay, anyway.
Yeah. Any other ideas for how to get out of this one?
Well, so after doing that log, that you can't just stop there. You need to figure out how you're going to move forward. So it would be important to make a plan there. What are specific steps or actions that you can take to move you towards that change that you're wanting to make, right? Such as spending more time reading or spending more time exercising, or if you want to begin going to church or to a Bible study or reading, you know, I think I already said reading, but whatever the case may be, what's the plan? What are specific steps? Don't just say, oh, I'm going to start exercising.
Yeah.
When are you going to do it? What days are you going to do it? What exercise program are you going to use? Or are you, you know, going to make one up yourself? How's that going to work? The other thing, Mark, that I think you mentioned when we were talking about this was to aim low, which sounds opposite of what you should do, but I love it.
Mm.
Do you want to talk more about that? Or
yeah, so basically, and it ties to the making a plan side, the making a plan thing too, which is basically just say, you know, you've got these meaningful changes you want to make in your life. They're difficult, you know. They're going to require some change. What's the smallest possible thing you can do in your day to move you toward that? And if you do this aim low concept, it means just make the smallest one today or tomorrow. It could be something simple. So if you're back to your example, I'm watching 4 hours of Netflix every day, or maybe it's an hour. It doesn't matter what it is. You're watching an hour a day. Let's just say, instead of making your plan be, I'm going to cut out it completely and replace that with reading. Just do 10 minutes. Just say, hey, I'm going to do 10 minutes of reading and I'll still watch 50 minutes of Netflix. Like, do something so that you're going to, at the end of the day, look back at it and go, I did make a meaningful change. It was possible, and you can feel good about the change that you made. So aim low is a way to not get, probably meet one of those failures.
Right. Well, and I think when we are making new goals or striving to make a change, we want the change now, and we want it to be drastic.
Yeah.
And we kind of get ahead of ourselves, and the goal that we're trying to achieve, or the steps that we say we're going to take to achieve that goal, are unrealistic. They're too lofty. But because we really desire that goal or that change, you know, we're trying to get there quickly, I guess, and just make these unattainable goals.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. We talked about before about that concept of the false hope syndrome, where we think we can make those changes, but we always overestimate those changes. Right. So this aim low is trying to kind of remember that and still make meaningful progress.
Yeah.
Now, you had one that I liked too, because the reality is we are busy and people are busy. And you had something around, how you brought your kids into doing other things. And can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I think this would be really relevant for stay-at-home parents, but I mean, even just parents in general, but because I, you know, do stay home with my kiddos, I have learned to just start involving them in the things that I do, instead of feeling like, so let's take exercising, for example, and pre-children, I wanted my 30, 45 minutes to an hour or whatever it was to exercise and to get in this amazing workout, you know, where I was sweating and just my heart was, you know, pumping. And then post kiddos, it took a while, but I learned that, okay, this isn't happening, right? This isn't working. So I need to adjust. I need to adjust my expectations and change it a little bit here. So I just started involving the kiddos in exercising, or trying to fit it in while we're out for a walk. I might just walk more briskly, or I might do lunges or squats or calf raises along the way. People probably look at me like, what is that woman doing? But just kind of involving them with it. Or when I was prepping gifts for Christmas, I involved the kiddos with me doing that. Or reading. Sometimes if I'm reading something, I will read it out loud to them, even though they're likely not comprehending it. And their attention span for what I'm reading is literally maybe a couple minutes. But still, you know, just finding ways to involve them and sort of adjust my expectations too.
I'm picturing you doing calf raises and squats out in the neighborhood and all the neighbors, I'm sure.
I do a little, like, you know, look around to see if anybody's watching, but I'm sure people see me. Oh, well.
Okay, good. So yeah, I really like that one. Again, just picking one out, exercising, clearly one of those important but not urgent things, but you can also bring your kids into it, make it fun. Yeah. You may not win any, like, awards from your routine that day, but definitely still getting the heart rate going. Okay, good. So those are the two examples.
Yeah.
But I do have one more thing.
Okay.
And this is a sort of a tweak to, I think it's a little bit of a tweak to the busy one. And I'm going to say, maybe it doesn't resonate with you that you're too busy, but I do want to give one that's very similar, maybe even the same, which is you're sort of seeking pleasure. And what I mean by that is you're doing sort of the minimum throughout the day so that you can get to that fix of pleasure. We've hinted around at this with, hey, are you watching Netflix or playing video games or scrolling Twitter or Facebook? Like, really do a deep dive in yourself and say, is that what I'm doing? Am I just trying to get to that fix, get to that pleasure moment at the end of the day? You know, back to the, I just need to, after you gave me a hard time about Facebook back in college, but like, am I just trying to get to the social media at the end of the day? And then that's really what I'm doing. I'm just doing everything to get there. And I would say that's another example of being stuck. So really do a deep dive in your own life. Does that resonate with you that that's what you're actually doing? And I wanted to call out one thing called the pleasure paradox. So this is a quote from a person named Viktor Frankl. He's a philosopher. In his book, Man's Search for Meaning, he says, happiness cannot be pursued, it must ensue. And it only does so as the unintended side effect of one's personal dedication to a cause greater than oneself, or as the byproduct of one's surrender to a person other than oneself. And the point of that is, when you seek pleasure, you actually never find it. If you seek happiness, you don't actually find it. What you need to seek is meaning, or, you know, back to our spontaneous obedience, which is deciding what's important and then acting in accordance with that. So that's the only way to actually attain happiness and actually attain pleasure in a sustained way. The problem with seeking pleasure is even if you get those quick fixes, you always want the next one. It dies off, you want the next one, and usually you want it more, or you want to do something more. And that's a dangerous place to be in. So that's the one more thing I wanted to add to that second example as well.
Perfect. The one thing I wanted to share is a book that Mark and I, was that a year ago we read together?
Yeah.
It's The Common Rule, Habits of Purpose for an Age of Distraction by Justin Early. I don't know how to say his last name, but it's Early. And we can put information in the notes about that. But that book was really good, just about making you think about where your time is going or the habits you engage in. And he had, was it seven, I think, habits, or was it 14?
No.
Just seven.
It wasn't 14. I'd say it's closer to 7 than 14 if it's not 7.
I can't remember the number, but there were daily and weekly habits or something like that. And it was a really good book. And some of the things I have adopted and still do, and then other things I have fallen out of the habit of doing, I actually should get that book out again and reference it. But anyway, I think that's a good book.
Yeah.
If you're feeling like, oh, I'm too busy, I think that's a good book to read.
We'll definitely add that into the description so that people can check that out as well.
Okay.
Anything you wanted to add before we close?
Well, I want to end with a quote from you.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Sure.
Okay. So Mark wrote this in an article.
Yeah, it'll publish the article sometime in the near future, let's say. But yeah.
And I love it. It says, so I'll just read it for you. Every moment in our lives is an opportunity to take right action. Right action could mean making a drastic change, even though it is uncomfortable, or it could mean doubling down on the existing path and being willing to be misunderstood. But it is never change to avoid diligence and grit, or doubling down to avoid discomfort and instability.
Okay.
There you go.
All right.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
And we'll see you next time.
See ya.